Chapter 115. All next day, Emma Airedale, Dolly, and Vix remained cooped up together in what had now been their prison for so many days, without seeing any person or hearing any sound but the murmured conversation in an outer room of the men who kept watch over them. There appeared to be more of these fellows than there had been hitherto, and they could no longer hear the voices of women, which they had before plainly distinguished. Some new excitement, too, seemed to prevail among them, for there was much stealthy going in and out, and a constant questioning of those who were newly arrived. They had previously been quite reckless in their behavior, often making a great uproar, quarreling among themselves, fighting, dancing, and singing. They were now very subdued and silent, conversing almost in whispers, and stealing in and out with a soft and stealthy tread, very different from the boisterous trampling in which their arrivals and departures had hitherto been announced to the trembling captives. Whether this change was occasioned by the presence among them of some person of authority in their ranks, or by any other cause, they were unable to decide. Sometimes they thought it was in part attributable to there being a sick man in the chamber, for last night there had been a shuffling of feet, as though a burden were brought in, and afterwards a moaning noise. But they had no means of ascertaining the truth, for any question or entreaty on their parts only provoked a storm of execrations, or something worse, and they were too happy to be left alone, unassailed by threats or admiration, to risk even that comfort by any voluntary communication with those who held them in durance. It was sufficiently evident, both to Emma and to the locksmith's poor little daughter herself, that she, Dolly, was the great object of attraction, and that so soon as they should have leisure to indulge in the softer passion, you and Mr. Tappert, it would certainly fall to blows for her sake. In which latter case, it was not very difficult to see whose prize she would become. With all her old horror of that man revived, and deepened into a degree of aversion and abhorrence which no language can describe, with a thousand old recollections and regrets, and causes of distress, anxiety, and fear, besetting her on all sides, poor Dolly Varden, sweet, blooming, buxom Dolly began to hang her head, and fade, and droop, like a beautiful flower. The color fled from her cheeks, her courage forsook her, her gentle heart failed. Unmindful of all her provoking caprices, forgetful of all her conquests and inconstancy, with all her winning little vanities quite gone, she nestled all the livelong day in Emma Airedale's bosom, and sometimes calling on her dear old gray-haired father, sometimes on her mother, and sometimes even on her old home, pined slowly away, like a poor bird in its cage. Light hearts, that float so gaily on a smooth stream, that are so sparkling, and buoyant in the sunshine down upon fruit, bloom upon flowers, blush in summer air, life of the winged insect, whose whole existence is a day, how soon ye sink in troubled water. Poor Dolly's heart a little, gentle, idle, fickle thing, giddy, restless, fluttering, constant to nothing but bright looks, and smiles and laughter, Dolly's heart was breaking. Emma had known grief, and could bear it better. She had little comfort to impart, but she could soothe and tend her, and she did so, and Dolly clung to her like a child to its nurse. In endeavoring to inspire her with some fortitude, she increased her own. And though the nights were long, and the days dismal, and she felt the wasting influence of watching and fatigue, and had perhaps a more defined and clear perception of their destitute condition and its worst dangers, she uttered no complaint. Before the ruffians, in whose power they were, she bore herself so calmly, and with such an appearance, in the midst of all her terror, of a secret conviction, that they dared not harm her, that there was not a man among them, but held her in some degree of dread, and more than one believed she had a weapon hidden in her dress, and was prepared to use it. Such was their condition, when they were joined by Miss Mix, who gave them to understand that she too had been taken prisoner, because of her charms, and detailed such feats of resistance she had performed, her virtue having given her supernatural strength, that they felt it quite a happiness to have her for a champion. Nor was this the only comfort they derived at first from Mick's presence and society. For that young lady displayed such resignation and long-suffering, and so much meek endurance, under her trials, and breathed in all her chaste discourse a spirit of such holy confidence and resignation, and devout belief, that all would happen for the best, that Emma felt her courage strengthened by the bright example, never doubting but that everything she said was true, and that she, like them, was torn from all she loved, and agonized by doubt and apprehension. As to poor Dolly, she was roused, at first, by seeing one who came from home, but when she heard under what circumstances she had left it, and into whose hands her father had fallen, she wept more bitterly than ever, and refused all comfort. Miss Mix was at some trouble to reprove her for this state of mind, and to entreat her to take example by herself, who, she said, was now receiving back, with interest, tenfold the amount of her subscriptions to the red brick dwelling house, in the articles of peace of mind and a quiet conscience. And, while on serious topics, Miss Mix considered it her duty to try her hand at the conversion of Miss Haredale, for whose improvement she launched into a polemical address of some length, in the course whereof she likened herself unto a chosen missionary, and that young lady to a cannibal in darkness. Indeed, she returned so often to these sublects, and so frequently called upon them to take a lesson from her, at the same time vaunting, and, as it were, rioting in, her huge unworthiness, and abundant excess of sin, that, in the course of a short time, she became, in that small chamber, rather a nuisance than a comfort, and rendered them, if possible, even more unhappy than they had been before. The night had now come, and for the first time, for their jailers had been regular in bringing food and candles, they were left in darkness. Any change in their condition in such a place inspired new fears. And when some hours had passed, and the gloom was still unbroken, Emma could no longer repress her alarm. They listened attentively. There was the same murmuring in the outer room, and now and then a moan which seemed to be wrung from a person in great pain, who made an effort to subdue it, but could not. Even these men seemed to be in darkness too, for no light shone through the chinks in the door, nor were they moving, as their custom was, but quite still. The silence being unbroken by so much as the creaking of a board. At first, Miss Mix wondered greatly in her own mind who this sick person might be, but arriving, on second thoughts, at the conclusion that he was a part of the schemes on foot, and an artful device soon to be employed with great success, she opined, for Miss Haredale's comfort, that it must be some misguided papist who had been wounded. And this happy supposition encouraged her to say, under her breath, "Alleluia!" several times. "Is it possible," said Emma, with some indignation, "that you who have seen these men committing the outrages you have told us of, and who have fallen into their hands, like us, can exult in their cruelties?" "Personal considerations, miss," rejoined Mix, "sinks into nothing, afore a noble cause. Alleluia! Alleluia! Alleluia, good gentlemen!" It seemed from the shrill pertinacity with which Miss Mix repeated this form of acclamation, that she was calling the same through the keyhole of the door, but in the profound darkness she could not be seen. "If the time has come, heaven knows it may come at any moment, when they are bent on prosecuting the designs, whatever they may be, with which they have brought us here, can you still encourage, and take part with them?" demanded Emma. "I thank my goodness gracious blessed stars I can, miss," returned Mix, with increased energy. "Alleluia, good gentlemen!" Even Dolly, K. cast down and disappointed as she was, revived at this, and bade Mix hold her tongue directly. Which, was you pleased to observe, Miss Varden? Said Mix, with a strong emphasis on the irrelative pronoun. Dolly repeated her request. Oh, gracious me! Cried Mix, with hysterical derision. Oh, gracious me! Yes, to be sure I will. Oh yes! I am a abject slave, and a toiling, moiling, constant working, always being found fault with, never giving satisfactions, nor having no time to clean oneself, Potter's Wessel and I, miss. Oh yes! My situations is lowly, and my capacities is limited, and my duties is to humble myself afore the base degenerating daughters of their blessed mothers as is fit to keep companies with holy saints, but is born to persecutions from wicked relations, and to demean myself before them as is no better than infidels and it, miss. Oh yes! My only becoming occupations is to help young flaunting pageants to brush, and comb and titillate their souls into whitening and sepultures, and leave the young men, to think that there ain't a bit of padding in it, nor no pinchings nor fillings out, nor pomadums nor deceits nor earthly wantities and it, miss. Yes, to be sure it is, oh yes. Having delivered these ironical passages with a most wonderful volubility, and with a shrillness perfectly deafening, especially when she jerked out the interjections, Miss Mix, from mere habit, and not because weeping was at all appropriate to the occasion, which was one of triumph, concluded by bursting into a flood of tears, and calling in an impassioned manner on the name of Simmons. What Emma Airedale and Dolly would have done, or how long Miss Mix, now that she had hoisted her true colors, would have gone on waving them before their astonished senses, it is impossible to tell. Nor is it necessary to speculate on these matters, for a startling interruption occurred at that moment, which took their whole attention by storm. This was a violent knocking at the door of the house, and then its sudden bursting open, which was immediately succeeded by a scuffle in the room without, and the clash of weapons. Transported with the hope that rescue had at length arrived, Emma and Dolly shrieked aloud for help, nor were their shrieks unanswered. For after a hurried interval, a man, bearing in one hand a drawn sword, and in the other a taper, rushed into the chamber where they were confined. It was some check upon their transport, to find in this person an entire stranger, but they appealed to him, nevertheless, and besought him, in impassioned language, to restore them to their friends. For what other purpose am I here? He answered, closing the door, and standing with his back against it. With what object have I made my way to this place, through difficulty and danger, but to preserve you? With a joy for which it was impossible to find adequate expression, they embraced each other, and thanked heaven for this most timely aid. Their deliverer stepped forward for a moment, to put the light upon the table, and immediately returning to his former position against the door, bared his head, and looked on smilingly. You have news of my uncle, sir? Said Emma, turning hastily towards him. And of my father and mother? Added Dolly. Yes, he said. Good news. They are alive and unhurt? They both cried at once. Yes, and unhurt, he rejoined. And close at hand? I did not say close at hand, he answered smoothly. They are at no great distance. Your friends, sweet one, he added, addressing Dolly, are within a few hours' journey. You will be restored to them, I hope, tonight. My uncle, sir, faltered Emma. Your uncle, dear Miss Airedale, happily, I say happily, because he has succeeded where many of our creed have failed, and is safe has crossed the sea, and is out of Britain. I thank God for it, said Emma, faintly. You say well. You have reason to be thankful. Greater reason than it is possible for you, who have seen, but one night of these cruel outrages, to imagine. Apostrophe, does he desire, apostrophe said Emma, that I should follow him? Apostrophe, do you ask, if he desires it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the stranger in surprise. If he desires it. But you do not know the danger of remaining in England, the difficulty of escape, or the price hundreds would pay to secure the means, when you make that inquiry. Pardon me. I had forgotten that you could not, being prisoner here. Apostrophe, I gather, sir, apostrophe said Emma, after a moment's pause, from what you hint at, but fear to tell me, that I have witnessed but the beginning, and the least, of the violence to which we are exposed, and that it has not yet slackened in its fury? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he shrugged his shoulders, shook his head, lifted up his hands, and with the same smooth smile, which was not a pleasant one to see, cast his eyes upon the ground, and remained silent. You may venture, sir, to speak plain, apostrophe said Emma, and to tell me the worst. We have undergone some preparation for it. Apostrophe, but here Dolly interposed, and entreated her not to hear the worst, but the best, and besought the gentleman to tell him the best, and to keep the remainder of his news until they were safe among their friends again. It is told in three words, apostrophe he said, glancing at the locksmith's daughter with a look of some displeasure. The people have risen, to a man, against us. The streets are filled with soldiers, who support them, and do their bidding. We have no protection but from above, and no safety but in flight, and that is a poor resource. For we are watched on every hand, and detained here, both by force and fraud. Miss Airedale, I cannot bear, believe me, that I cannot bear by speaking of myself, or what I have done, or am prepared to do, to seem to vaunt my services before you. But, having powerful Protestant connections, and having my whole wealth embarked with theirs in shipping and commerce, I happily possessed the means of saving your uncle. I have the means of saving you, and in redemption of my sacred promise, made to him, I am here. Pledged not to leave you until I have placed you in his arms. The treachery or penitence of one of the men about you led to the discovery of your place of confinement, and that I have forced my way here, sword in hand, you see. Apostrophe, you bring, apostrophe said Emma, faltering, some note or token from my uncle. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, he doesn't, apostrophe cried Dolly, pointing at him earnestly. Now I am sure he doesn't. Don't go with him for the world. Apostrophe, hush, pretty fool, be silent, apostrophe he replied, frowning angrily upon her. No, Miss Airedale, I have no letter, nor any token of any kind. For while I sympathize with you, and such as you, on whom misfortune so heavy, and so undeserved has fallen, I value my life. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.